let's just kick it off by talking about the state of blogging. A few years back, I think it was in 2009 at the Gospel Coalition, at that iteration of Band of Bloggers, we wondered whether blogging would continue. There was a lot of talk in 2009 about whether blogging was dead. And Tim, for example, said it wasn't, and it seems that he was right. What is the state of blogging today in 2012, both in terms of the general market, if you're interested in talking about that, and in terms of the evangelical blog scene? So I'll start with Justin and just go down the line. Any thoughts you have?
Yeah, I'd rather hear from Colin first. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that question necessarily. I do think it's right that blogging is not dead. It will probably never die as long as people want more than 140 characters. I think Twitter is a great gateway into reading longer form content, which blogs tend to specialize in. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I think Colin's more gifted at kind of looking at the whole lay of the land. But it's what I like to do. I'll keep doing it as long as I still enjoy it and people continue to read it. But in my blog, it's just more of a gateway to other things out there. So I think as long as people want content, blogging in some form will exist.
Yeah.
I just want to ask a question. How many people here subscribe to the print version of Christianity Today? Raise your hand if you would. How about World Magazine? Blogs aren't going anywhere, right? How else are you going to know what's going on in the Christian world? That's just the way ideas are carried. That's the way people are finding out things now through the blogosphere. Don't you think? Isn't that...
Yeah, well, I was going to... One of the two major trends that we've seen as far as the state of Christian blogging, one is that, publishers have been struggling, newspapers, magazines have been struggling. That's not new news for the last 10 years at least. And you're finally seeing a tipping point right now. So Christianity Today has just now, in the last month, moved all of their print content behind a subscriber wall. So the web traffic will evaporate, basically. But the idea is that it'll drive more, because the reason you don't subscribe is because, well, part of it is that you've been able to read everything online for free. So that's the big, it's a challenge, because it may hurt. I'm an editor at large for Christianity Today, so it may hurt the magazine 10 years down the road, because we're moving more and more toward the web. Print will be around, but it's not going to ever go back to where it was. So, but it'll help to ensure that the magazine will at least survive for the next 10 years, which it may not. I'm not saying anything specifically about Christianity Today there. It's just anything in print. You've also seen the New York Times go from, all free to then 10, 20 articles, now in April down to 10 articles. The Gannett Newspaper Corporation, now everything. You get 10 free articles for the rest of your life. And then you're behind. So that's a USA Today owned corporation. So basically, blogging may even see something of a resurgence, perhaps because of all of this stuff going behind paywalls. But that's necessity. Yes, the traffic will fall off. Yes, they will miss out on all the Twitter conversations. The stuff that I write now for these places, I send it out through Twitter, and then I get a bunch of angry comments from people saying, "I can't read it. What's going on here?" So that's one of the major things that we're seeing, and that'll probably end up helping blogging. Another thing that we're seeing at the Gospel Coalition, our goal has always been really to put Band of Bloggers into practice. This concept that we're together, that we're stronger together and unified. That doesn't mean uniform, but we're stronger together than we are separate. And so that's why we've seen something of, consolidation. So part of it is that we've opened up. We have regular contributors. We're trying to accomplish some of the news-type things. We have Owen writes for us regularly, Mike Cosper down there, others. But then we also are bringing on a few other new bloggers. The idea is that people want to be together. And some people like Tim can pull off regular content every day that you want to read. Wow. And that is amazing. I can't do that. So I'm really impressed by that. But not many can. So part of what we try to do is to recognize blogging has unleashed the writing ability of the public. But not everybody can be Tim. So for the rest of us, we contribute and we produce the blog effect, but not as, but nobody has to pull it off every day. So to consolidation, and then the other thing is just the newspaper and magazine industry are moving big.
I don't know how many people know this. World Magazine, Tim, maybe you've seen other people do this. To my knowledge, World's the only one who's figured out how to do this. Everything's behind a paywall. But if I blog about a World Magazine article and I link to it from my blog, if you're reading my blog, you click on the link and you can go read the full World Magazine article for free. So if you tried to just go there independently, you can't read it. But if you give it a little link love, then somebody can read it. I think that's an ingenious system. How many people know that about World Magazine?
Is that like with the Wall Street Journal with Google, where if you go there, you can't get it, but if you Google the article, you can get it?
Right. Yeah, I don't know how that stuff works.
World set it up very specifically for that reason, to drive referral traffic so they can still make money then off banner ads. Very, very clever.
Let it be known that there was one person who raised their hand.
There's one person.
That knows that.
Yeah.
I think
a very savvy person over here.
Yeah. You get a baseball bat.
You get your choice of one of these portraits after that. That New York Times thing has killed me because I love blogging New York Times articles. That's killed me.
Yeah, you got to pony up.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. It's like $150 a year or something.
It's a lot. So I think a lot of the... You can only really understand blogging still, I think, in relation to old media, right, to mainstream media. And the battle with mainstream media is they have professional writers they pay. Therefore, they have to have some revenue stream. They've tried the banner ad things. Everybody knows that doesn't work to generate enough revenue to do that. So they've had to go behind paywalls. Eventually, I think things will shift there, and you and I will get used to paying for things online. For now, we want it all free. And so what we're willing to do is have lower quality but higher urgency. So we can, again, waiting for Christianity Today to show up in my mailbox next month with last month's news just doesn't fit the mindset now, at least for news. It's still good for, you know, Ligonier's Table Talk magazine is great to get because they're not trying to do that. So it's still a very valuable printed resource. But when you're looking for news, you can get it online. So people are willing to take lower quality writing in order to get more urgency. The news cycle's been shrunk down so much. So the blogosphere really scratches that itch.
I do want to say one bit of encouragement to the writers here, and I don't say this as a means of criticizing my friends at Christianity Today, but the quality of work I deal with now at the Gospel Coalition that I edit is higher than what I dealt with on a regular basis at CT, even from the people that we were paying regularly. So, and that's not, it's just, I was surprised by that. So one of the things is, it's not necessarily lower quality. But generally speaking, the whole blogosphere, yes. But I hope, I mean, at least what we're trying to do is to give you, like at the Gospel Coalition, trying to give you the quality. It's edited, it's selected, it's all that stuff, but without the cost. So, anyway.
Well, I would add to that, there are several people in the process of blogging have now become authors, and to see that they've had a platform through their blog to have a visibility with publishers to see that they are consistently putting out great content and writing very well. I know Trevin's here. Trevin Wax has done that, and Joe Thorne is another example. Jared Wilson. These guys have not just written one book, are now writing multiple books who were at one point just writing blog posts. So I think that's a very encouraging thing to see.
I mean, that has to change the publishing process when you guys are sitting in those editorial meetings.
Yeah, it's very different when somebody comes and they have a good book proposal and you just don't know, is anybody going to resonate with this? And blogging is a real-time test ground, for better or for worse. If, you know, you can be the world's greatest writer, and if nobody wants to read your stuff, it's just not going to work, and something where the financials need to make sense. So getting your stuff out there and seeing if people really resonate with it, if it takes off, that's... I mean, you could put Tim in that category, too,
that's right.
You know, it was obvious that people were reading his blog and benefiting from it, and that led into his first book.
I want to talk about strengths and weaknesses of blogging. It seems like when I hear people talk about blogs, even now in 2012, after all the good and perhaps the ill that blogs have accomplished, people tend to see things in binary categories. Blogs are either good, really good, or bad. Self-promoting, you know, driving the worst of controversy, whipping things up into flames. We've talked about this question before at this panel, this very panel, lo, these many years ago. But I want to ask it again now. I mean, we've actually come through several pretty big evangelical/reformed theological controversies in the last year. I have another question after this, but how do you see blogging now after you've been doing this for almost a decade, several of us? Plus, minuses, is it good, is it bad?
Well, like anything else, it's good and bad. It's not the thing itself, it's how it's used. What every blogger learns very quickly as they start to blog is that controversy sells, and so, or in this case, controversy brings page views, and really that's the metric that everybody's going for. Page views are currency in the blog sphere, just eyeballs on a screen with your website in front of it. That's what everyone's going for, and controversy is the easiest way to get a lot of them. And so, speaking personally, I'm constantly battling in my own mind, am I doing something just because I know it'll drive traffic? Am I doing something because I really believe in it? And then, controversy, am I doing it just because it's controversial and because I want to speak to that? There are times to speak to controversy. There are times not to. There are times when I just have nothing to say about something, so I'm not going to speak to it and expose my own folly or ignorance. So good or bad, I don't think it's quite the right question. I think it's just, it is. It's a fact of life now. Blogs are here. They're here to stay for at least the time being. They're not going anywhere, so we just need to learn to do it well and to do it humbly and to really seek to serve the church as we do it.
Let me sharpen the question. Somebody says, I hear this among the older crowd, the older generation that's not on the blogs, it's not on Twitter, it's not on Facebook, okay? They're not connected, and they say blogs are self-promoting, they fan the flames of controversy. What do you say to them?
I'd say, which blog? And which posts are you talking about? I think it's become somewhat fashionable to lament blogging, and I don't think it's just because I blog that I would defend blogging. I mean, it's a truism of life. Squeaky wheels are always going to get the most attention. But by and large, the blogs that I read are edifying, thoughtful, helpful, informative, and if they're not, don't read them. I think, you know, somebody wrote to me once, I still owe them a response, you know, troubled by kind of the mean Calvinist blogs, and just, you know, if that doesn't help you love Jesus more or equip you in the faith or equip your preaching or teaching or your ministry or help you love people more, I mean, nobody's making you read them. So sometimes I think it's the fault of, you know, we become addicted not just as blog producers to controversy, but also as blog consumers. You know, what's the link that I'm going to click on? And I mean, I see that going to the Drudge. I go to the Drudge Report multiple times a day and tend to click on the stuff that's got the most provocative headline or the most interesting thing. I think that's part of human nature. But I think by and large, the blogs I tend to go to are balanced, thoughtful, not just off the cuff. I would make a distinction between blog content and blog comments. And I'd also say you don't need to read the comments to every blog post. And
talk about that.
You can applaud.
One of the things that I'm
most proud of that I got changed with my blog.
We changed it for our whole site.
Yeah. Is that if I do a blog post now, you go to it, you can't see the comments, and you have to click an extra thing in order to see the comments. Right. It used to be that I'd put something about, you know, somebody in ministry or an update on somebody, and you go there and here's this little thing, you know, so-and-so became a pastor, and you read 35 negative comments about the person. Just now it's like there's an extra layer, it's there, but you have to do a little more work to get to the comments. And I think comments are where it tends to be more unedifying. I think because it's not as upfront, people feel the freedom just to say whatever comes into their mind. I'll do some blog post, and 2 weeks later, it's two individual guys still going after each other with this public debate, getting upset. But I don't think I should just turn off blog comments. That may be a discussion for another time.
You need to do one of those weird, like, put this, write the words that you see, the letters that you see in this box, and you're like, I can't, I don't even know what these letters are. Like, I'm never going to be things. Able to write on the internet.
Yeah, I have thought of, I haven't told you this, but instead of the button where
this
you
is
type,
the place to do it.
Yeah,
let's just yeah. Sort this out.
Instead of the comment, you type your comment and then you put publish. Yeah. Just change the word publish to edify. Just if that would cause somebody to go, maybe not. I can't hit that button.
Colin.
Yeah.
And the rest. Are comments getting worse? Are the haters coming out more and more? I mean, it seems like comments are getting worse. Time goes on.
Well,
Or is it just Owen's post?
I absolutely love my work. One of the downsides is waking up every morning, opening up WordPress, and clicking on comments. And I'm just like, what is going to be there? But I can't, I mean, I have plenty of people say, just shut them down. But the thing is, it's like anything else. The majority of comments, I actually think, are pretty helpful. I mean, they offer clarification, there is edification, and ultimately I really think it's part of the spirit of blogging. I mean, I think there does need to be, like with Justin, one of the editorial convictions that we had is there still should be a distinction between the writer and the commenter. We wanted to maintain some of that distinction. Because one of the easiest ways for me to ban you from our website is if you use our platform to go after us, essentially. Just, I mean, not because I disagree with dissent, but it's because, look, you're basically a parasite on what we're trying to do here. Like, you don't have a platform of your own that anybody would read, but you'll come hijack what we're doing in order to take it in your direction. That's one of the easiest ways. I mean, people say all sorts of stuff that's critical, and there's plenty to criticize, but that frustrates me a lot, just because, I mean, I love the openness, I love the comments, I love the give and take, I love it when our authors jump in, and I think that's something that most of them are willing to do. I mean, Tim Keller does that on a fairly regular basis with his material, but you also have to be careful, because my authors often get pretty discouraged and come to me and say, what was I thinking? Here, I mean, I just, so it's a hard thing. So they might be getting worse, but in general, I don't know. I mean, I think it's like blogging. Like, people will come and, the Gospel Coalition is this way. You guys are blank. You're so mean. You're so negative. You're so, well, I know what we publish. And 90% of it is really encouraging and positive. But they fixate on the 10%. And I think that's probably the same way with comments. You know, the ones that stick with us are the negative 10%. And the 90, we just kind of assume, take for granted.
Mm. Guys, thoughts?
Comments? Yeah, I don't think comments are getting a whole lot worse. People are people, and they've always been bad at times, good at others. So you and I both posted about Triple E today. So there's going to be all sorts of comments about how rap music is evil. I know when I come home, when I get back to my hotel room tonight, I'll have just this massive controversy, people saying rap is terrible, and... Right. You know, it's just going to happen. So you kind of anticipate these things, and you just go with the flow. Be willing to ban people. I'm not afraid to kick people off. If I won't let them say it from my pulpit or my living room, I won't let them say it on my blog either. So you don't owe them anything.
Yeah, that's well taken. I just wonder if over the years, as people are now living in a 2.0 world, where you don't click on an Encyclopedia Britannica article, you know, and just read it. You comment on everything. You're trained to think that. I just wonder if people are retrenching and getting harder and harder in their view to people they disagree with. This kind of thing, no. I'm sure you're right, Tim. I'm sure it's always happened. But I feel like, I just wonder if people are tougher, more politicized.
Well, what you see is people are skimming instead of reading now, and they're commenting after skimming an article. They haven't even really read it. They kind of skim over it, and then they go and leave a comment. You've already answered that. In your article. And honestly, one of the most discouraging things about blogging is the fact that controversy sells, because you'll write an article that means a lot to you and really comes from the heart, and you think it really expresses something, and nobody cares. But if you write an article and you just say, you know, this person sucks, and that's your title, you get tens of thousands of readers in no time, because people will
like
just
Gandhi.
Skim. Yeah, Gandhi, right. Whatever the case happens to be. But it's amazing how that controversy... arouses interest in people. People will jump right on that, and the stuff that comes from the heart and teaches better, people aren't that interested in.
Interestingly, the comments that I will leave up are the ones of the people who obviously skimmed the article and completely missed the point, because right. their fate is deserved for right. all the other comments mock yeah. them mercilessly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially on Facebook, by the way.
And if you think yeah. Christian blog comments are bad, oh. just go read political blog yeah. once yeah. in a while and look That's at some true. Comments, and you'll see, okay, let's... We're not doing that bad compared to...
Yeah, that's actually in my, like, my favorite sports writers and whatnot. They'll always say, like, okay, every time somebody mentions me on Twitter, I'll read that. Every email, I'll respond to. Comments on the articles, never read any of them. That's the only way you can stay sane.
You know, I had an experience recently where a guy sent me an email and said, I can't remember what I had posted, but he sent me an email and said, I don't read your blog to read junk like this, so either you post more of this or I'm going to stop reading it. I get those... fairly frequently. And so I wrote this guy back, and I just said, help me understand here. I just tried to be really nice. And then he wrote back, and he was very, very nice after that. And I think people just forget that there's blogs are from people. Blog is it's an expression of a real person writing real words from the heart. And the internet makes us all so abstract from one another that we really do forget that there are people there, that somebody's invested time and effort in this. And so you send that comment, you say, you're just like Hitler, then you're just forgetting the fact that there's a real person there, and you're making it all into this big parody or something. But when you make contact, the other person's going to hate you more, but often people come back, and this guy apologizes. He felt bad when he realized that I was actually a person. And we tend to do that and forget that I'm not just a computer program that's spitting out content. I'm a person. And I think that's a lot of what we lose our humanity on the web just because of how disconnected we are. Mediated.
Yeah, I would just say one thing that I think it would clarify a lot of the common culture that we see in blogs today is in Philippians 2:14, it says, do all things without grumbling or complaining, that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. If you looked at our blogs and look at our comments, do we look in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation? Are we shining as lights in the world by our commentary as Christians? And I think the key is doing things without grumbling or complaining. And I've come to realize this, that there are people who will go in the comments section who have Google alerts set up for certain people, certain names, certain issues, and they've never been on my website ever. But it comes up in their Google alert, and they're going to go there, and they're going to copy and paste a hit piece, or have you seen this, or here's a website dedicated to this person. And I'm like, why? You know, why do you exist? You know, and so it's a big issue. It really is. But I think there is a critical culture too, that we feel like we have to respond to everything that happens in the evangelical world. And I think that's the danger when you have a blog, because you think that because controversy sells, if I'm going to make it in the blogosphere and if I'm ever going to have a self promotion, then I have to speak to a controversy. And I've just come to the point where I realized that I know that 99 out of 100 people are going to say it better than me, so why do I feel like I have to say something about that?
Well, one thing, blogs, just to jump off that point, they've changed the expectations of writing and just of what an article will look like, because if you realize, almost every single blog post has the exact same format. So-and-so may say this, but I say this. I mean, it's just axiomatic. I mean, that's just everything on the web, and I think that's the blog culture, because of that interactive element to it. I mean, you didn't used to see articles; all articles weren't written that same way. But now, if you don't discipline yourself as a blogger, you will find yourself everything will be purely reactionary. So and so said this; I'm here to correct them.
But that makes sense, because the blogosphere has a wider community. It's a blogosphere. Right. You never had the newspaper sphere or the magazine
right.
sphere. People weren't reacting back
exactly.
and forth in the same way.
Right.
Blogs are meant to carry controversy or carry discussion throughout, and so you sharpen one another, go back and forth.
Well, it's definitely a good thing, but on the whole, I think
yeah.
it's just you just find yourself, that's your default mode as a blogger. You need to stop and you need to recognize that, and then I think in some ways hopefully diversify your content.
But let me just say anecdotally about the good and bad and ugly of blogging. I have been fortunate. I'm not a widely read blog in the sense of blog traffic and things like that, but I've been fortunate enough to be a part of a couple of things that that have had traction with people that's been really good. A couple weeks ago, I went on WordPress and looked at the all-time, what are the blog posts that got the most traffic, and the And the two series that got the most traffic were had nothing to do with controversy. One was in 2008, I put together this Puritan Reading Challenge where I encouraged people to read a Puritan paperback every month. And we had a community. I actually had a radio show at the end of each month that we interviewed, talked about the book. And I think we had around 15,000 people do that. Well, I don't have that anywhere close to that kind of traffic, but we had 15,000 people reading Puritan paperbacks who had never read a Puritan before in their life. And then last year, 2011, a similar situation came up with the memory moleskin. You know, I was going to plan to memorize larger sections of Scripture, and I went to look at the book of Philippians, and I was talking with Mikey Anderson, who runs the Resurgence, and I said, hey, let's put something together, and I'll come up with a plan, and let's promote it. And I think we had 35,000 people sign up to do the memory moleskin. And that was just a real blessing, because I got emails from ladies, stay-at-home moms in Japan, who are missionary moms, together memorizing the book of Philippians, to entire churches, to missionaries. I mean, it just was great all around the world. And, I mean, we would have never had that reach or influence had it not been for blogs. And, you know, I'm not on the Gospel Coalition. I don't have an aggregation that's inherent within it. If it weren't for people like Justin and Tim and others, and, you know, helping me get the word out, it wouldn't have had that reach. And so that was an encouragement to me. And know that it is possible to be an encouragement and blessing to other people outside of your realm of influence when you have an idea that people would buy into.
Yeah. I would just commend Timmy and encourage the rest of you, because I think sometimes people can feel like, well, what else is there new to say? And, you know, some controversy, everybody's already weighed in on it. Just, you know, prayerful creativity, like Timmy's demonstrated, those sort of things can really catch on and edify a large swath of people. Let me make one other comment, going back a little bit to blog comments. Brian Chappell has written a piece that's not finished yet on the ethics of blogging, Christian ethics of blogging, maybe a 10 or 15 page paper, that just to put a bug in your ear, to keep an eye out for that whenever that appears. It is very, very helpful looking at just the Christian ethics of speech and responsibility and slander and the use of anonymous sources and all those sort of things. And the most troubling part of it for me was talking about hosting comments that are unkind, that are slanderous, that go after somebody, that are rude and unedifying. And he was really making the argument to host them is not that much different than to say them. You're essentially providing a platform by which, as Colin was talking earlier, you know, you become a delivery system to the public by which these unedifying comments can happen. And for me, the hardest thing is so many of them are gray area things. It's not like just outright slander. It's just, you know, raising questions without answers and about public figures and that sort of thing. So not sure how to work through all that. But
probably segues to Owen's next question.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say before the next one, it's funny because you mentioned how political blogs have their own animal. And my wife reads a few cooking blogs. Mm-hmm. What's the woman's name? She's in Texas. Her name's Ree.
Pioneer Woman.
Thank you. She doesn't read all the Reformed theology blogs and stuff. She reads Pioneer Woman and some Fashionista blogs and this sort of thing. And she said the same thing happens there. She said that she'll read a post about, I don't know, making coffee cake, you know? Okay, seemingly a harmless topic. Not that controversial. Not the elephant room, which we're going to next. But there'll be these, like, comment wars, 500 comments. Ree, I love this recipe, and you look so pretty in the photo. Next comment, no, she doesn't. She looks fat. She's using too much butter. And it's like, wow.
I like how you pretended that you didn't remember the blog's name.
I'm a Pioneer Woman aficionado. I'll declare that now. Okay, yes, so building off of what we've been discussing, let's make it particular, from the universal to the particular. This last year we had a couple major controversies matters that we're not taking lightly. We're joking, but we're not taking lightly. So we had the debacle with the elephant room, and we had some issues with sovereign grace. Jefferson Bethke, as well, took a ton of flack for a video about Jesus produced in an incredibly secular part of the country. So comment on these particular things. What reflections do you have from any of those three? What have we learned? Are there still open wounds? What would you say as you process those?
Well, I think, I think the one with Jeff, who's here someplace, but I think that one was in some ways an easier thing because Jefferson does not represent a movement per se. It was an individual person doing a video and received some, hurtful comments and some kind of iron sharpening iron pushback. So I think that's in a little bit different category than, say, some of the controversy with Sovereign Grace or with Elephant Room. So much to say about both of those that could be said. Again, I'd take a little bit of a contrarian perspective on both of those in that there is so much dialogue going on behind the scenes that not everybody is privy to. Take Elephant Room as an example. There was just a lot of conversation going on behind closed doors, private communication. And some of the people in the blogosphere were saying, why isn't TGC saying more? Why isn't Carson or Keller saying more? And so I think if you're not privy to those conversations, it can seem like stonewalling or sweeping something under the carpet. And, why aren't we being communicated to? And I think some of that is we're conditioned to when there's information, it should be made public. And I think in the... Yeah.
Now.
And I think in the Sovereign Grace one, which again is its own animal, very complicated, but there you have an example with the WikiLeaks sort of mentality and strategy among some people who had left the movement, I guess some people who are still in it, just saying, that's not good enough. We're going to take this into our own hands. We're going to go public. We're going to make documents public. Nothing's off limits. There's literally no ethics involved with some of how this is publicly disseminated. And so, for people who don't know what's going on behind the scenes, I can understand the frustration. I think we should not always be in a position of demanding information. It's one thing if you're in the church, if this has something to do with you, but if you're just curious, I think sometimes we need to put a lid on our curiosity.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Colin, you're an editor, and you're involved in these different things. It's got to be hard running a site that is designed to get traffic, and you could comment on these things, right? How do you handle this with holding back? People are expecting stuff yesterday.
Yeah, it's a good question. This is really occupies a lot of my time. This is really my responsibility for the Gospel Coalition. One of the things I mentioned to one of our newest editors, Joe Carter, Joe's got a lot of experience, and when we were hiring him, I sat down and I said, well, one of the things you need to understand, Joe, is that at the Gospel Coalition, our editorial aims serve other goals. Our goals are laid out by our council members in our foundation documents. Our goal is to promote gospel-centered ministry along the lines of these, of our theological vision for ministry and our confessional statement. And so our editorial purposes are to assist that broader goal. But that's very different than where I was at Christiane Today. Christiane Today, your editorial goals are the purpose of the organization. So success editorially with traffic and whatnot is fulfilling your purpose. There's no disconnect there. Now, to be clear, I don't care where you work, New York Times, Christiane Today, there's going to be places you don't go. CT is not going to touch Billy Graham and the Billy Graham family, okay? They're not going to do that. There are other people who serve on the board. They're not going to touch those ministries. So you've got to be careful. I mean, again, that's just human because there's relationships there. And relationships there that are really precious, they're really delicate, and you've got to be careful about how you handle them publicly. Again, the New York Times would do the same thing, just with certain politicians or with certain authors or certain critics or whatever. So you can't escape it anywhere, but it's a little bit more of a barrier with TGCs. So part of what we have going on, the priority is on the individuals who are involved, the dynamics that are at work there of fostering those relationships and trying to work through the controversies that come in the relational context among the different leaders. So that's the priority. And the editorial effort, you know, we want to be able to help bring some clarity to the situation publicly, but there are just a host of reasons, and they're not malicious. I mean, at least as far as I can tell of why to keep them. I mean, I don't want to know the things that I know. You know, like some of the stuff. It's not good. I mean, some of it. I mean, just there have been some real difficulties, and it's not like it's not going to help. It's not going to help things. It's not going to help people on either side, people who are the ones in some cases causing the problems and the others who are trying to help them.
Going public hurts the private conversations.
It hurts the private conversations, and sometimes it also hurts the people, even if you are in conflict with that person and you're upset about something the person is doing. You could make life miserable for them with the sort of public access you have. But you don't want to do that. That would just make the things worse.
Right, and you need time to reflect on things like this. These are heavy, weighty, complex things, as you said. Right. Reflection, we're in this constant struggle here in the blogging, editing world between reflection and publishing. And it's really tricky. Because like with the Trayvon Martin stuff, for example, you saw an interesting balance between people, some people close to the situation saying, let's hold off, and others saying, we got to respond to this now. But then it seems like there's all this information that's coming out as the days go by that seems to contradict itself. It's not clear, clearly a horrible event that's going to need to be addressed publicly in America. But we're so early in.
Right.
But there was such a call for immediate response. That's dangerous. Tim, what do you think?
I think there's certain blogs, I think Gospel Coalition, Justin, I think all three of us would be in that category where people feel that we in some ways represent other people, and so they demand of us a response. They expect that we'll respond to something. And you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, does it make a sound? If there's a controversy and the blogosphere isn't talking about it, is it really a controversy? I think there's some of that going on where people really, if there's a good book that's released and it isn't talked about in the blogosphere, could it really be a good book? I go looking for book reviews when a new book comes out like that. I'm just not sure what to think about things until I've seen the blogosphere mull it over. And people demand quick responses. So something like the Elephant Room, you know, the whole thing was very, very compressed. It happened in a very short time, and that wasn't enough time to really reflect on it. I chose just not to address that one because I just didn't know what to say about it. And I thought, if I just spew something out, I'll get lots of traffic, but I'm just going to expose my own foolishness in this. I don't have anything wise or godly to say about it. In the church in general, I think we owe one another a whole lot of believe all things and hope all things. And so when a controversy comes to light, I think the sovereign grace one, judge, jury, executioner, all of that was decided the second we saw those documents, the second those things were out. But then I just had to think in my own life, okay, I'm a pastor in a church, been an elder in a church. What would it look like from the outside if only the person we had to discipline or only the person we dealt with gave his side of the story? You know, of course it's going to look terrible because he's conveying all the information. He's put things together in a way that serves him. So we've got to be willing to just step back and not comment on things, be willing to be ignorant about things. We don't all have to know everything. And like Colin said, there's lots of things, I'm sure Justin feels the same, lots of things I wish I could unknow about people, but the emails show up. And Sovereign Grace is just the first. There's other ministries that currently are being exposed or very soon will be exposed in very similar ways. That's just how people are relating now, make the information public. Which can be okay at times. It's a difficult thing to know because if somebody in a church is systemically sexually abusing people, then you want that to come to light and you want there to be information. And so somewhere there's got to be that line. What is serious enough and undealt with enough that we need to expose it? So I just think it takes time for these things to be worked out. You know, and when the anything in the world. When the telephone was first popularized, nobody knew how to answer the phone, right? So everybody answered differently. Some people would pick it up and just say, "What do you want?" or "Who's there?" And now we know that would be rude. That would be rude telephone etiquette. It took time for society to kind of work that stuff out. And now we all know how to answer the phone. I think the blogosphere is the same. It takes time for us to figure these things out, to figure out what the ethics are of blogging. An academic paper will be great because then the popular level people can popularize that and it can start to take root and it'll just spread like everything else does. But we just got to give ourselves time to work that out. In the meantime, we need to be gracious and humble and kind and really believe the best about one another, not be so quick to jump on things.
Alexander Graham Bell thought that people were going to answer the phone and say, "Ahoy."
Really? I do that. So, as a Canadian.
It's stuck in Canada.
Canadian.
Right. Well, I think one thing, just to go off that, and then I'll kick it over to you, Timmy. One of the things that I try to foster among our editors of the Gospel Coalition is to think as pastors, which is helpful because we all either plan to be or are or have that orientation. And that's very different. That's not the way editors usually think. So you're thinking pastorally, what's going to be helpful here? And sometimes that's exposure. And sometimes it's discretion. And I also just say, I also think one of the things that's so powerful, and this is not going away anytime soon, but as a local church leader, if you're in that position, I mean, we're not turning the page back on the WikiLeaks era. Like, it's going to be hard to, if you've got stuff to hide, it's going to be hard to hide it. And generally, the editor part of me, and the part, I mean, generally, this is maybe my polity as well, but generally, I think that openness is good. I mean, I think it's accountability. It's an extra level of accountability now in our churches, and I may not have all the sympathy for everybody who's doing the exposing, but it's a reality that we have to live with, and I hope we can use it for good.
Yeah. I just think there has to be some governing principles in our minds and how we're going to predetermine how we're going to answer and how we're going to respond to these things when they come. Because when they do come, it will be so overwhelming, and the news will be so sexy. We want to feel like we have to know everything that's happening. And so I think it'd be helpful if we have those filters in place ahead of time. And I think these discussions can help be formative in that process. I wasn't able to go to Band of Bloggers last year because of issues related to things happening on the local church level, and so the event at the Gospel Coalition happened without me because, you know, the local church is it. I mean, that's where our lives, we live and die in the local church. Yeah. And I think the situation with Sovereign Grace, I mean, I think, like what you said, I don't know whoever said it, the first person to come out with information, your tendency is to believe it. But you know, you look at Proverbs 18, and there's two verses in Proverbs 18 that really speak to the situation. It says in verse 13, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame. So what you're saying is when the elephant room comes out, if I have something to say, it's just going to be foolish. Is you're just simply saying it's my folly and shame to speak about something I haven't heard. And I've not just heard publicly, but heard privately, those private conversations that are taking place. And then in verse 17, it says, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And so the thing with Sovereign Grace, the thing with the elephant room, I think it's wise and prudent for us to withhold judgment. And even when we do have a judgment, not to feel like we have to speak it. Because, you know, James says, let's be slow to speak, quick to hear, quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. Yeah. And our flesh is exactly the opposite of that. And so we have to be intentional in preventing ourselves from going down those paths because it is natural to go down those paths. And the situation with Sovereign Grace and the situation with a lot of lot of local churches' issues are far more complicated and far more nuanced than any papers that you're going to find out there about any church. And I just think it would be wise for us to heed those admonitions from Scripture.
The angriest I get is when people, especially if they're friends, criticize what I'm involved with, and it's mistaken, and they could have easily written me and gotten clarification from that, but they didn't care to listen. The problem is that's easier said by me about other people than it is for me to practice myself and how I deal with others. Yes. Blogging, yeah.
We are going to close in just a few minutes. If you have a question, make your way here right now, because I want to close just a, you know, a few minutes early. So if you have a question, make your way to the microphone. It's right here. Okay? I just want to say two things. The Trinity is incredibly important. It's not unimportant. It's incredibly important. Secondly, on this platform, I am so thankful for what Jefferson Bethke did in that video. Keep making great art. Christian artists, don't be afraid of doing it. We need to treat our artists with great care and love.
And let me say on that, Jeff's response to the critique that was published on our website was a model and made the whole situation, which if he hadn't been as mature and godly and respectful, could have made the situation a lot worse. It actually made it a model of what we can do, I think. So thank you for that.
And before we get to your question, one question I do want to ask is about this critique culture that we have in the Young Restless and Reform movement. Some of the critiques that we have against us is that we are not missional, we're not evangelistic, we're not living incarnationally in our community, we're not reaching people, we're on our computers waiting for the next controversy to arise so that we can form an opinion and blog about it. And so with the day and age we live in, with the limited amount of margin and time that we have, is blogging as a format and a medium playing into our strengths in a sense of we love truth, we love doctrine, we love to stand, contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints, but when it comes to living out in real life with people who need Christ and getting in messy situations, that it's far more cleaner to go into our bedroom and get on our computer and write a blog post than it is to get in somebody's life and love them and then lead them to Christ. And so my question is, does the critiques about us not being missional, not being evangelistic, does it land? Does it have traction? Is it true? And is blogging playing into our strengths and not allowing us to really get into real life situations, whether it's with lost people, with people in our church, where we are more accessible and approachable to people?
Yeah, I think that's something you've got to answer on a personal level. People make that broad sweeping statement about this movement, whatever this movement is. I don't think you can make a statement like that. I think each man has to weigh that in his own heart. Each woman has to weigh that in her own heart and say, how am I balancing these things? I don't think we can do that. You know, that we can say that you can only give this amount of time to blogging, and you have to have, for every 1 hour of blogging, you have to do 3 hours of whatever you're doing with your neighbors. I think we just, each person before the Lord, just decide, am I emphasizing what needs to be emphasized?
If we are more excited about discerning and critiquing, if we are more excited about that than we are about actual efforts to promote the gospel that are proceeding from a strong biblical stance, we have a problem. I mean, we put out so few major products that actually impact the culture. We have to be careful that when something actually makes it into the ether, that we don't crush it. Since you're the moderator now, I had to answer.
No, okay. I got a question.
Hi, I'm Nathan W. Bingham from nwbingham.com and also the Internet Outreach Manager at Ligonier Ministries. Thanks, guys, for having the panel discussion. Timmy, you almost stole my thunder. I was going to say that there's been a big resurgence or encouragement for us to realize that we can be missionaries in our own communities and neighborhood, and you don't need to go to a foreign land to be a missionary. And so my question was going to be, do you have any thoughts on how those in the Christian blogosphere can be better missionaries to the wider blogosphere? It seems that most blogs are Christians writing to a Christian audience. So do you have any practical ways or thoughts on how we could actually be better missionaries online?
Good question.
I think one of the things that I found to be, that I've gotten the most feedback from people is when I, whether it's through Twitter or blogging, share my experiences in the real world. I mean, oftentimes we can get so excited about a controversy that when we're at the dinner table, we're talking about what's happening online, when really it should be the opposite. What's happening online is what's happening in real life. And so if we're having the opportunity to, just recently there's a young man in our church who's living on the streets of Boston 3 months ago, homeless, and he's 23 years old, came to the end of himself and ended up in our church two months ago, and this past Easter Sunday I baptized him. And I was just sharing a story about how God intervened in his life and brought him to just absolute brokenness, trusting Christ and now following him. Share those stories with other people online. So let what comes on the surface of the internet flow, be the overflow or the outflow of what's happening in a real-life context. I think we need more of that. It keeps the virtual world from being dominant, make the real world dominant, and let that be an encouragement, because that's really where it ends, you know. We're going to give an account for our life in real life, you know. And so I would encourage that.
I think it's much like anything else in the world. How do you be a businessman? How do you be an athlete and do it for the Lord? You honor the Lord in what you do. You do it the best you can, and then when you have opportunities, you share the gospel. And I think you just, you know, there's a lot of Christian bloggers out there who are writing about cooking or writing about other things, and I've seen them take opportunities to just, on Easter, some of them were just giving little gospel bits, and, you know, I don't think, if I'm writing about theology, I'll never get unbelievers to read it, and that's okay, you know, that's okay, but I've got to be then doing it in other ways. And so whatever your interest is, whatever your passion, if you want to blog about that, and then just start integrating your faith into it, just as you would in any other part of life. I don't think blogging is substantially different.
I want to let you out a little early, so we're going to take these two questions, though, okay? And we'll just go quickly, and then you'll be dismissed a little early. Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering, it seems like blogging, you know, on the web, there's so many voices, and I'm kind of wondering, it's a great vehicle for addressing immediate things, immediate controversies and everything. I'm kind of wondering who's listening and how you get people's attention, and also kind of piggybacking off that, how you view blogging in terms of producing content that has enduring value, maybe not just addressing the immediate controversies.
Tim writes lots of book reviews that keep getting hundreds of thousands of views years later.
Yeah, I think book reviews are one of the ways of doing that, because they last and people keep looking for them. But here's the problem, again, is when I write posts that are really heartfelt and the kind of thing that has been a big, I've thought about something, I've worked it out in my life, now I'm writing about it, you people in this room don't care. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying that's the reality. And if you write it, I don't care. But that's the reality, right? That's not what the blog, that's not the main thing we want from the blogosphere. Sometimes we get those. Sometimes you do care. Sometimes I do care. But really what we're looking for is we're looking for the 9 amazing ways of doing this, that kind of post, you know, the quick skimmable posts that we can look at and then, you know, enjoy but not go back to. The infographics are something I've been doing lately, just trying to do that, but those don't have a lot of lasting value. I think it's, there's certain things that will last and be meaningful, but they probably won't get the high traffic that the other things will. It'll still be the controversial ones that'll get people in.
And I think one of the presuppositions of this discussion has been that a successful blog post is one that's read by a lot of people. And Tim might write that, and 100 people might read it, and some of them may really be changed. The Lord may use a simple blog post or a long blog post or a really heartfelt blog post to be a turning point in somebody's life. I think it's part of the culture of being in blogging is that there's kind of an aura of self-deprecation. Nobody wants to take it so seriously, like, I'm more passionate about blogging than anything in my life. It just seems like, okay, that was a little strange. But the Lord really, I mean, we shouldn't denigrate it so much. The Lord really can use an insightful word, you know, fitly spoken at a certain time to snap an addiction or to be part of somebody's spiritual formation or correct a wrong thought that they were thinking. So don't think just in terms of what can I do that will last forever and that will reach the masses, but what can I do best? You know, other people may never be able to write the sort of book reviews Tim does, but they may be able to speak into a certain issue, speak from a position of brokenness, and the Lord may really use it. And it may not be flashy.
You got to blog for yourself before you blog for others. You know, really the great benefit in blogging is mostly to you than to others. And that's true whether you have 1 person or 1,000 reading a day. Just blog for yourself, work things out. And if others want to come along for the journey, great. If not, you're still benefiting and you're still growing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about the past and the history of blogging. What do you guys see as being the kind of future direction? What are some things that you'd like to see happening in the blogosphere? And what's a charge that you would give to all of us bloggers to champion that?
You guys are the futurists.
I think we've got to work out a lot of the ethics of it. That's been a long time coming. We're just doing that in this digital world. Cell phones being a great example. How can you use it? Where can you use it? Tweeting during sermons, another great example. Is that right? Is that wrong? These are just things. We're just working this stuff out. We're negotiating it across society, across the church. And the blogosphere is one of those things where I think eventually we'll kind of figure out where we can use it well, how we shouldn't use it. So that'll be part of the future. I think it's going to keep going roughly as it is for the time being. It's still, Twitter isn't going to carry what we need to carry. You know, the Christian faith can't be carried in 140 characters. And, you know, you can get glimpses of it, but you can't. You still need that substantial information. So where's it going? Obviously, there's a lot of consolidation happening. You see that with the collective over here. Yeah, and that's a great thing.
I think you called us the Borg earlier.
The Borg, yeah. That's a great thing. I think that's very helpful to everybody. And I think we're seeing a great thing we're seeing through Gospel Coalition is editorial standards being applied to it, which is also a great thing, just trying to raise the quality. I think that's a great development, and hopefully that'll just help others raise the level of their game as well.
In terms of what I'd say to you guys, just an encouragement, I remember a pastor telling me one time that at his church he wants to be an edification machine. Anytime he's in contact with somebody, he just wants to edify, encourage. And that can include correction, too. That doesn't mean just saying affirmation. So just edify, 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 edify. And I think, you know, if you have to tape that as a note card onto your computer screen, again, that under edification, I think, covers everything about Christian speech, Christian attitude, Christian feelings, but if we're not in it to edify people, we should just get out.
That sounds like a blog post.
Yeah.
Badoom Ching. Okay, on that, let me just close us in prayer, and then we'll be done, and books are out here, okay? Okay, let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for this event. Thank you for these guys, Lord. I just pray that you would continue to bless their ministries, Lord, their blogging work, their writing for you. And I pray that that in coming days we would see increased health and love among the evangelical blogging community. I pray, Father, that we would be so excited by the promotion of the gospel and the defense of the truth, Lord, that that excitement would overwhelm lesser pleasures, lesser ends, Lord. Thank you for this day. Please bless this conference now that we are attending. We pray, Lord, that it will stir our hearts and the hearts of thousands to live boldly for Christ in this fallen world. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.